This week's episode of the Fitcast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best-tasting protein powder out there. You can check them out at BlackStarLabs.com. Don't forget to mention the Fitcast when you place your order. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Fitcast. This is episode number 193. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and right now I'm by myself, but we have Eric Cressy coming up in just a few short minutes. And we have a great episode lined up for you guys. The interview that I did with Eric is about 35 minutes, I think, something like that. And we talk about a wide range of subjects from conditioning to increasing strength if you kind of get stuck in a certain spot. So we have a bunch of stuff for you. And if you go to thefitcast.com and you look at the show notes, we're going to have a link for his new product, Show and Go. And you can click through that link and you can get right to his page. So I'm pretty much going to stop talking and let Eric do the rest of the talking. I'm going to have some more info for the project that I'm working on next week. I'm not going to give too much away, but if you follow me on Facebook and Twitter, I'm kind of giving out some hints, but we're going to have some stuff for you in early October. That's pretty much all I can say. So again, here is Eric Cressy, and like I said, guys, thanks for listening as always, and we'll have the full cast for you back for you next week. Unfortunately, my computer crashed this week, so we weren't able to get together. I was kind of in panic mode, and that's when the scheduling went out the window. So thanks again, as always, and take care, and we'll see you next week. With me right now is Eric Cressy. You may know him from his books, Maximum Strength, and also the DVDs, Accessing Correct, Magnificent Mobility. He also has a fantastic shoulder DVD out there called Optimum Shoulder Performance. And he's got something awesome coming out in the next couple days. It's actually coming really close. By the time you guys hear it, it's just going to be about out, called Show and Go. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be back.
It's been a while, man. I feel like it's been a long time, but I feel like I say that every time we have you on here. But it's good to talk to you, and you've obviously had some awesome stuff going on at ericcressy.com. Maybe people out there haven't been checking out the website and the blogs and stuff like that. I mean, you're pretty much blogging up a storm, and I think it's really interesting that you had an athlete ask you, or maybe it was an intern ask you, about how you get all this stuff done, and you literally just don't stop working pretty much, right?
No, it's pretty bad. We had a kid who's on kind of a post-rehab stint with a professional team right now, who came directly to us after his season wrapped up. So he got a good week of training in before he flew back home to be with his family. But he stayed at the house here with Anna and I, and he was just catching the NFL season opener, and there I was plugging away on my computer, writing programs for our guys. And this is kind of our busiest time of the year, as all of our guys get back from the long season, and we got to do evaluations. We got to get their programs in place, and on top of that, with the new product coming out, and I'm also getting married in a couple weeks. It's been a little bit hectic.
That's good, man. I mean, definitely shows the people out there, the up and comers, and the younger people that listen to the podcast who want to get in the industry. That's pretty much what it takes, because we get that question a lot.
I think a lot of people are so dead set on trying to find a way to work a few hours that a lot of times you got to realize that you got to put the hours in early on in your career, and then maybe you can start to think about that later on. But I mean, I don't have any kids. I don't have some of those competing demands that other people have. So, this for me is the time to do it.
Well, let's jump into the questions. One of the later questions that we just got before we did the show was from John, and I think this is an interesting question, because he sent a question a long time ago about the death circuit that I did way back in 07 or something like that, and he wants to know where the most recent intern death circuit or what the most recent intern death circuit is. I know he's busy with his new book and just being awesome all around, but people want to see it. It sounded ridiculous to go around. And again, that's from John. So how do you come up with these death circuits to basically, see how the interns progress through their internship?
It's funny. I'd like to say that there's like a rhyme or reason to our madness, but it more or less comes down to thinking of stuff that would make them the most miserable, and then we just throw a bunch of crap on the wall and see what sticks. But there's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason to it. Usually it's something we do once a semester, and we throw all the guys in the madness, and we've actually had a couple of clients who wanted to jump in and try it too, which we have to kind of pick and choose who we let do it. But it's usually kind of your classic like strongman stuff, but they'll throw in like 20 rep squats and, you know, pull ups and maybe some slide board. And there's just a lot of stuff in there. So we've mixed and matched over the semester, but actually Pete's made a pretty good point of recording a lot of them and putting them up on the blog at CressyPerformance.com. So there's definitely videos to watch, but I mean, it's all stuff that, you know, that we do, you know, in training and stuff like that. The only difference is it's all kind of thrown together in a little bit more of a zero rest scenario. And I mean, they may last anywhere from like 4 minutes up to like over 10. So it's entertaining to watch. And they actually, the secret to it is we get to pick their music. So, you know, we have guys doing it to Barbie Girl and California Girls and Girls Just Want to Have Fun and stuff like that. So we bust their chops pretty good.
Awesome. Yeah. I feel like I got the, you know, the easy end of things, and I didn't even, I mean, this was before I was an intern, but, I feel like my desk circuit was not, you know, even
I don't know.
Compared to what they were doing.
You're kind of like a death circuit forerunner.
Yes.
You're kind of a martyr, I guess you could say.
Well, let's talk about we got lots of questions about deadlifting, yeah, squatting, benching, you know, all over the board. But Blent wants to know what advice you would give someone to improve their press and bench press. No matter how many times I deload and how small I microload my increases, I haven't gotten past 80 kilogram bench and a 50 kilogram press. Doing 3x5. I'm looking to gain strength and size. Deads and squats are at 135 kilograms and 120 kilograms, respectively, so far.
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, looking at his numbers right there, I mean, he's an 80 kilogram bench. I mean, you're under 200 pounds there. So, I mean, he certainly has a long way to go on the strength side of things. So there's no reason that he should be plateauing on those lifts right now. I think, you know, the first thing I would look at with someone like that is just total calories in. A lot of times the quickest way to see big strength increases is to actually let your body weight come up a little bit. So if he's not eating enough, you know, and his weight's staying the same, that's a kind of a classic example of why people can't gain, especially in the upper body. You know, I've found that you can really, you know, you can improve on a deadlift without changing your body weight much. But if you want to get your bench, you want to get your, you know, your overhead press and also your squat up, one of the quickest ways to do it is to actually add some body weight. So, I mean, obviously you don't want to do it really fast and make it sloppy, but, you know, with his numbers, there's no reason he shouldn't be, you know, able to add 30, 40 pounds to a bench press over the course of, you know, a 16 week program. And if he's not changing, you know, something's happening. You know, looking at his kind of sets and rep schemes, if he's doing 3x5, first off, I mean, it's A, not a lot of work, but B, you know, I mean, I can't speak to his assistance work, but, you know, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And then B, he's not doing a whole lot of work at a high percentage. I mean, if you look at the average population, you take a 5 rep max, and he's probably working below a 5 rep max. If he's actually doing 3 sets of 5, you know, a 5 rep max is probably 85% for the average person. So, you know, do 3x5 and you're probably working at 80 to 85% somewhere in there. You're not going to get strong on 80% of your max, training after, you know, the first year or two of training. So if you've got a year or two under your belt, you need to start spending more time at that 90% and above range. So basically doing sets of 1 to 3, you know, I'm not saying take 1 RMs every time you go in the gym, but, there should be like constant, you know, kind of improvements along that front. You know, the third thing I would look at for him is looking at exercise rotation. You know, I think it's pretty important to rotate exercise instead of just staying on a bench press or staying on an overhead press. Use variations of it. I mean, do push presses for the overhead stuff, go to incline presses, go to board presses, go to floor presses, you know, presses against bands and chains if you have access to it. So change the stimulus, because your body does get pretty used to stuff, and rotating things is really, really valuable.
Do you think it's too early for him to do, you know, more speed work?
You know, that's an interesting point. I don't think it's going to hurt him, but, you know, I'm not sure it's a super value use of his training time if it's going to take up the space from something else. Gotcha. What I'd say for a guy like that is throw in 3 to 4 sets of speed work on your regular bench days. So use it almost like an extended warm-up and then go to more of your rep work. You know, I'm more inclined to do one day that's more heavy and one day in the kind of that 5 to 8 rep range. So, you know, it'll help him put a little bit of meat on his body and all that. I mean, he needs to get bigger and stronger overall. I wouldn't worry too much about, you know, just the upper body strength, because it's in the grand scheme of things, if you actually look at the numbers he outlined, you know, they're not really out of proportion.
Mark sent in a very interesting question, one of the most interesting questions we've ever got. But he says, Eric, first off, I loved Maximum Strength. I got a lot stronger when I followed the program. My question is regarding snowboarding-specific training. I don't know how often you work with snowboarders, but I wanted to know if there were any special stretches or mobility workouts that a snowboarder should do, namely regarding the flexibility of my backside, meaning from my back all the way down through my Achilles and plantar fascia. I've always had lackluster flexibility in my low back, hamstrings, Achilles, and feet, so maybe I just need to do the basics, but I consider your insight invaluable. Thanks a ton.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple perspectives to take on this. The first one I would say, you know, regardless of your sport, is you never want to assume. I mean, we've had pitchers come in who have huge internal rotation deficits, like you often expect, and we've had pitchers come in who have, you know, perfectly fine internal rotation who don't need to be stretched. So, you know, the important thing is never assume based on a population. You always make sure you assess first and then kind of program accordingly. You know, admittedly, I have not worked with a lot of snowboarders. I've had some skiers over the years, but, you know, one thing I think you can definitely count on being kind of applicable in this population is they are in a situation where they're booted, meaning that their ankles are pretty locked up. So anytime you do that, whether it's hockey, whether it's basketball, something like that, where there is kind of a restrictive measure going on at that ankle, you do need to spend a lot more time doing your ankle mobility stuff, whether it's, you know, static stretching for the calves or, you know, more ideal scenario, like more of the ankle mobilization stuff that we've outlined in the past. So those would be some big focuses. You know, he mentions he's got lackluster flexibility in his low back. I mean, you know, that's just instability. You probably don't need to be cranking and stretching your lower back. Otherwise, you're going to cause some issues. But, you know, along those lines, you know, hip mobility is obviously going to be pretty key, particularly in the kind of that frontal plane, like you kind of hinted at. But no, in that regard, I do a lot of stuff for the hip external rotators, a lot of work at you know, kind of in terms of ankle mobility, and kind of see where it takes us. I mean, obviously, you want to assess them individually, but that's not real ideal in an online context.
Yeah, the next question that we have, again, is an interesting question from one of our female listeners, Bridget from San Francisco. She says, hi, Eric. A while back, I saw a video of your girlfriend, I guess we can say now fiance, doing pull-ups with a vest on for multiple reps. I still struggle to do a bodyweight pull-up after training for 3 years. I'm not overweight. I'm 5'2", 128 pounds. How did she get so strong?
That's funny. You know, I think the first thing to look at for some females is just, you know, body composition. I mean, if she's 5'2", 128, she's certainly not really overweight. So, you know, you're not going to see a lot of changes on that. But you will see a lot of females who tend to be, you know, their strength to body weight ratio is just out of whack because they're carrying too much body fat. So, you know, particularly in the lower half. So it's going to impact it. That said, Anna was a college rower, so she tended to be stronger in upper back. That said, you know, she couldn't do a pull-up when I met her, but she bang out like 11 right now. So I mean, a lot of it for her, we started off and actually Kevin, you were her initial personal trainer, as you'll recall.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other story for another day, but basically the long story short is when we started out, we did a lot more eccentric stuff. So basically jump up, lower yourself under control for kind of 3 to 5 seconds per rep. And usually do sets of, you know, 3 to 5 on that as well. I've never been a huge, huge fan of the band assisted stuff, but we can certainly use it. I tend to be a lot more partial to either eccentric only or like partner assisted. So you get just enough assistance from your partner. I mean, obviously you can use a Gravitron if you want to, but, you know, those are the stuff I'm more inclined to really, you know, gravitate towards. And like I said, you know, improving body composition will help the cause as well.
You brought up eccentric work, and you know, my question about that would be, when you deal with younger athletes, because obviously you deal with a lot of younger baseball players and other athletes, but how much eccentric work can you really put in there without making them too sore or really have them complain too much about it?
Oh, I mean, they're going to get sore no matter what when they first start out with the new program. But yeah, I mean, you will, people will get actually probably more sore in their kind of their elbow flexors than they actually will in their upper back. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as long as you make them cognizant of it, you know, before the fact, they're going to know to expect it. So it won't be quite as bad. I mean, obviously you're not going to add this in the day before they go out and pitch or, mm-hmm. or something like that. You want to make sure that the timing is right. But I mean, that's kind of the nature of the beast of the new program. You're going to be sore when you start it. So you should anticipate it. So I don't worry about that a ton.
What about for other exercises? Do you find eccentric work to be beneficial in any other areas?
You know, it's interesting. Probably not as much. You know, I know it's funny. I remember actually Mike Boyle talked about it in the past. Like, you know, everyone's always said that we should be able to handle 120% of, you know, of our concentric max eccentrically. And mm-hmm. that's just not true. I mean, you know, I'm a 365 bencher and, you know, I don't know, I'll pull up the math on my computer here. If I do 365 times 1.2, that's 438. if I put 438 on a bench, it's going to be pretty explosive, but only on the way down. So I don't know where people came up with this, but no, I don't use quite as much eccentric stuff. I mean, we may do it more for teaching technique, like people learning to squat, people learning to do single leg stuff, and all that, or just, you know, putting people in the right position on other exercises. But I'm not as heavily in on eccentric stuff as I think a lot of other people are.
Gotcha.
Pull up's great. No, I love it there.
Hell yeah. Next question that we have comes from Chrissy from Austin, Texas. It says, I found your blog over a year ago, and since then I've purchased and completed your maximum strength program with great results. I finally have gotten a 315-pound deadlift. Anyways, I'm a 19-year-old student studying business. I'm in my freshman year, but I find myself wanting to get into strength and conditioning more and more. Where should I start in terms of educating myself, and what major would be best for me to get into the field?
It is a good question. First thing they can do, I actually wrote a blog post, and it's called "Want to be a personal trainer or strength coach? Start here." I think it goes back in like early August, so they can find that on my blog, and maybe you could even link it underneath this.
Absolutely,
You know, it's actually really interesting. This really parallels what I was with. I actually went to college originally thinking I was going to be an accountant. So I went through 2 years of kind of business education with the marketing and the econ and the accounting and all that stuff. And after my sophomore year, I realized I wanted to make a switch. So what I did was I transferred all my management credits into a sports management program, and they were kind of worth their weight in gold there. And all I had to do was take some classes in health service delivery systems to kind of get that sports management degree. You know, that said, I kind of tacked on an exercise science major, so I double majored. I think I graduated like 183 credits in 4 years. So wow. I took summer classes all through and probably spent way too much money on college in hindsight. But it got me to where I wanted to be, and I went to grad school and did exercise science there as well. You know, what I tell people is, you know, for him, he's in a good position, meaning he's after his freshman year, he can easily make a switch. Your freshman year is just your, you know, kind of your core courses, and you can pretty quickly and easily jump to a new major if that's what you decide to do. You know, obviously, I think internships are the absolute most valuable thing you can do. Get out, experience things. I mean, I had to do a 6-month internship in cardiac and pulmonary rehab to realize that it was not a good fit for me, and that I didn't want to do clinical exercise physiology. But, you know, with that in mind, you know, you got to go out and just try different things and find what the best fit for you is. So, you know, change majors, you know, and actually get into a couple internship opportunities, whether it's volunteer or for credit, and go from there. You know, the other stuff that I would kind of look at is, you know, finding a good mentor or someone you can ask, you know, who's doing what you want to do. So that's a big part of it. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, a lot of people will just jump right to doing a certification or something like that. And I think it's a pretty quick rush to judgment. It doesn't necessarily prepare you for where you want to be. So I think that's a, you know, kind of a big, you know, problem with our industry is that we're pretty unregulated and licensure isn't required. So it's good to do it the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously he probably hasn't taken his kinesiology, his exercise, physics classes and stuff like that. Do you think it's too early for him to start, you know, trying to go to seminars and, you know?
No, I think that it's never too early. I mean, there's always stuff you're going to do. At the very least, you know, you're going to, you know, you're going to make contacts, you're going to meet new people, you're going to get a feel for what's going on out there, and you're going to find what really, you know, piques your interest. You know, the other thing I just thought of reading that thing is, it's funny, people always ask me if there was anything I could do differently, what would it be? And, you know, I'm tremendously thrilled with where I am, and I'm pretty happy. But one thing I would have done in my undergraduate education is I would have either gone into physical therapy or into athletic training instead of exercise science. And the reason really is, as you get out into the real world, you find that an athletic trainer can do absolutely everything a strength and conditioning coach can do. They can just go and take a CSCS test on a weekend and line everything up. What you'll also see a physical therapist is they can do everything that an athletic trainer or a strength coach can do for the most part, aside from, you know, being on field and treating injuries in those situations with an athletic trainer. But, you know, as a physical therapist, first off, you kind of are at the top of that whole, sports medicine pyramid where you can kind of tell everyone else that you're right. Not to say that people act that way, but it is, kind of maybe a more respected position. Two, you can bill insurance. Three, you can do manual therapy. Four, you're allowed to diagnose. So there's a lot more that physical therapists can do. And, they always have that strength conditioning window as a fallback. You look at a strength coach, they can't diagnose. They can't do manual therapy. That's why we have to tell people the foam roll instead of putting our hands on people. Mm-hmm. We can't do rehab. We can't bill insurance. We can't charge workers' comp, anything like that. So it's, it makes things probably a little bit more cumbersome. But what you do have to realize is if you're going to be that strength conditioning coach or exercise science guy or whatever it may be, you have to surround yourself with really qualified professionals. I remember talking with Mike Boyle about this a couple years ago, is that, that's one of the reasons why he's always gone to such great lengths to keep the ATC after his name. It opens more doors for him, opens more windows in what he can actually do when he works with his athletes.
Well, Chris, I hope we get some kind of word from you in the next couple months. Let us know what's up, and hopefully you make a decision that makes you happy, man.
Good luck to you.
Next question that we have is from Neil. Again, here come the deadlift questions. I'm a big fan of yours and Mike Robertson's work. My problem is my deadlift setup. I was conventional deadlifting well around one and a half years ago, but swapped them out for Romanian deadlifts. I used those for 6 months, then went back to pulling conventional and couldn't get my setup down properly. I've knocked down the weight significantly, but the trouble appears to be my hips, my hips began too high in a sort of powerlifting stance where my torso is almost parallel to the floor. I have to consciously look in the mirror in front of me to lower my hips. Previously, this was something I never had to do. I've read your deadlifting diagnosis and Mastering the Deadlift articles, as well as your recent video on deadlifting. Any suggestions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first off, what he really got into was a very, very hip dominant deadlift position. I mean, I'm not saying that you should squat, you should deadlift your quads, but you do have to drop your hips a lot lower. With an RDL, the other thing, you're relying heavily on kind of that stretch reflex. So you're getting a lot of stretch shortening cycle contribution when you come down at the bottom of an RDL. When you look at a conventional deadlift, you're pulling it from a dead stop. So it's a different kind of strength and, takes a fair amount of pre-setup. With an RDL, you can kind of preset yourself before you even dip down in. With a deadlift, you have no load when you're setting up. Couple things that have been valuable, for people that we dealt with. First off, check your ankle, check your hip mobility. Because if that's garbage, you're not going to be able to get your hips down low to the bar. Second, look at your footwear. I know a lot of people who are doing RDLs or competitive Olympic lifters or whatever it may be. If he's trying to deadlift in Olympic lifting shoes from the floor, it's just not going to look good. So he may be in kind of a funky spot there. Even though it is giving him a little bit more, dorsiflexion range of motion, it can pitch him forward a little bit. The third thing is more cueing. After you've gotten into, the right footwear or just going barefoot, what you want to actually do is use that bar to pull yourself down into the bottom position. So, some people like to sit back into the bar. Some people like to just stoop down and then use the bar to pull themselves taut. What I've often cued people to use is, once you've got enough weight on the bar, once you're in that bottom position, you can really just squeeze the crap out of the bar and really pull your chest up really taut. So you use the weight of the bar to actually get you into position. So I hope that makes a little bit of sense.
Well, yeah, Neil, let us know what's up and definitely follow up on that. So next question that we have is from Billy, another deadlift question. Is it common to get spasming in the upper back muscles after a deadlift workout around the infraspinatus teres area? And how would you treat such spasms aside from using a tennis ball / trigger point therapy ball under that area?
I wouldn't say that's normal at all. I'd probably be more inclined to have him go get that checked out. Have I seen it before? Yes, but it's not something that I would consider common or acceptable. So I'm going to refer that one out and tell him to find a qualified medical practitioner in his area who can effectively screen what's going on.
What do you think would be causing something like that? Do you think he's just, his back's just not strong enough for the weight he's deadlifting?
It could be that. You get a lot of people who are very, very stiff in their posterior cuff. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot in guys who have big internal rotation deficits. So, it may be on the side of his throwing shoulder if he was an overhead athlete at one point in his career. You'll have some people who may, there could be a little legitimate nerve issue that it's getting kind of provoked and lighten him up a little bit. So there's a couple of different things that could be going on, but I'd be more inclined to think that he might be a guy who's real, real stiff in his posterior cuff, and that sucker's working working overtime and just really kind of guarding the second he gets those heavy weights in his hand.
Gotcha. Next question that we have comes from Sam. It's about maximum strength. I've been doing metabolic work / density work for the most of the year. I am down about 40 pounds so far. I would like to work on strength for the winter at least and have a good program. Is the new program where I should start? And I'm guessing he's talking about show and go, or pick up maximum strength. I'm 27 and, the last serious heavy lifting I did was football back in high school.
You know, I think you'd be surprised at how well all that metabolic and density work actually prepares you. I mean, think about all those reps. Your tendons are pretty well primed to do just about anything. So I think as long as you're conservative with loading and you're not going right in and trying to squat what you squatted back in high school, you should be fine as you get into it. But no, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be fine with the new programming, or you could do, you know, the maximum strength and go to that afterwards. But you know, I think it'd be an okay fit for him, especially knowing that, you know, there's a lot of stuff built in there that I think will keep him healthy. I mean, there's plenty of mobility warm-ups for each different phase. You know, he can pick and choose among a couple different options for how often he wants to train and what supplemental conditioning he wants to do. And then there's also, you know, deloading periods built in and all that. So there's kind of some safeguards in there to, you know, to make sure that it's a, you know, a sustainable program for someone who's jumping right into it.
Well, let's talk about show and go, because this is something, you know, obviously maximum strength was very successful and just tons of testimonials, especially I think the real cool thing is that you have all your interns that come and do maximum strength to kind of see where would they get in a couple months or 16 mm-hmm. weeks. So what's the thought process behind show and go? What's it all about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that I was looking at, I mean, we had a lot of people who had very good results with maximum strength. And what was interesting is, I talk about this a little bit in the introduction to this newer book, is that I actually originally turned down the invitation to write maximum strength because I was kind of adamant that I didn't think that you could write a workout for the masses that people could all do, because I was so used to individually screening everybody and all that. And it was the weirdest thing. I turned it down. I thanked Matt Fitzgerald for the offer, and then, you know, kind of just, you know, he emailed me back and was like, all right, bummer, but, you know, we'll move on. And literally, like, that night I got an email from a guy who had bar none the worst program I've ever seen. Like, this is a guy who had joint pain at every single place that he possibly could, like terrible structural balance in his programming, complete like lack of structural balance, you know, no fluctuation of training stress. It was just an absolute nightmare, and it was so bad I didn't even know where to start in critiquing it. It was just like, burn it and we'll start over. And I got to thinking about it a little bit more. I'm like, man, there are a lot of people that do this. I mean, I'm not saying everybody's this bad, but, you know, you see that and you walk into any commercial gym and the moronic crap you see is just mind numbing. So, you know, with that in mind, I was like, you know what, let's give this a try. So I asked for more information from Matt, and long story short, the rest is history. We released the book and back in 08, and it's actually sold, I think, over 16,000 copies now. So needless to say, the feedback was real, real good. And it kind of spurred me to thinking that we could do something maybe a little bit more involved and kind of progress things to the next step and do it in a little different format. So I decided to self-publish, and what I wanted to do with this newer product was I didn't want it to just be a book or just be like an ebook. I want it to be a resource. So it's a lot less conversational, I guess you could say, in tone than maximum strength. It's not nearly as long, because a lot more is devoted to the supplemental resources that I think can make it good, as opposed to just me, you know, blabbering on about whatever I want to talk about. So, you know, a lot of the writing itself and the main guide is more along the lines of interpreting the program, you know, covering a lot of frequently asked questions, talking about exercise modifications, and, you know, and just tips and strategies to be successful. You know, I think is the bread and butter of this program are a couple different things. You know, the first thing is, you know, that we've actually got the program set up so that you can do them as 3 times a week programs or 4 times a week programs. And also, as one of the bonuses, there's a 2 times a week program. So we have stuff for, you know, your in-season athletes or endurance athletes. If you can only get in and you know, lift twice a week, that's fine. You know, if 3 times a week is better for you, more full body, that's cool. You know, if you're someone who likes going 4 times a week, upper lower split, that works as well. And I think what we're really trying to show is, you know, the principal program's goal is to show people that there are certain key principles involved in any effective strength conditioning program. So, you know, there's comprehensive warm-ups, compound movements, fluctuating training stress, progressive overload, exercise rotation, single leg work, you know, more pulling than pushing. And you could go on and on and on about this stuff. But with a few modifications, and particularly with respect to like energy system development or the lack thereof, you can really take a generalized program and make it very specific to an individual. So really at its core, you know, the show and go setup is something that can be used for people trying to get stronger, more athletic, leaner, bigger, you know, or all of the above. So we kind of put a bunch of guinea pigs through it, and we had everything from bodybuilders to powerlifters to rock climbers to endurance athletes, and had very good results. So, you know, as a brief background, I guess, on the product itself, it's completely online. So there's the main manual I talked about, you know, but there's also four separate four-week phases. So it's 16 weeks of total training. And what's really cool about this is rather than like a, you know, traditional ebook or a print book, which is all pictures, we actually have a password protected online video database. There's over 175 exercises completely videoed in there. And basically you can go and watch videos of every exercise in the entire program. What's really cool about that is it's not just strength training stuff. That's all the mobility exercises we use. And they're all kind of put into a template telling you exactly what you can do. And in fact, they're actually on the exact training templates we use with our clients at Cressy Performance. So, you know, people can print the templates out. They can record everything they do during the session and really track along from week to week what kind of progress they make. What's also cool, I talked about how I think you need to really modify programs based on energy systems development. And what we did was we put in five different supplemental metabolic conditioning options. So there's movement training, there's interval work, there's a mixed option. There's no conditioning at all for people who are just trying to get bigger or using this in conjunction with whatever they do. And then there's an option where you can just perform your own sport, whether you're, you know, a flag football guy or whether you're someone who's, you know, playing recreational basketball three times a week. You know, there's an entire chapter actually based on exercise modifications. And that chapter is actually accompanied by a full video database of different exercises that we, you know, kind of give to people when they may not have either the ideal equipment access, like, you know, no squat rack or cables or something like that. Then we also have kind of modifications for people who may have mobility issues, meaning that, all right, if you don't have the flexibility to squat deep, use this instead. Don't have access to a squat rack, you know, apply these instead. So it's, you know, what we really tried to come down and do is make a very versatile program that could be a lot of things to a lot of people, which I know flies in the face of conventional marketing wisdom. But I think that if you appreciate how easily applied a lot of these modifications are, you can really, you know, put it into action pretty quickly. In conjunction with the product, we actually have quite a few bonuses that are available. Tony Gentilcore wrote up an ebook just about finishers, so basically stuff that you can apply at the end of lifts if you need a kick in the pants or a change of perspective on some stuff to liven training up. Brett Contreras did something called the top five glute exercises. Everyone knows Brett is, you know, being the glute guy, and here he goes into some pretty good detail on a few of them and stuff that, you know, people can integrate if that's some stuff they need to work on. Chris Howard, who was one of your fellow interns at Cressy Performance back in the day, actually did a pretty cool video database and tag along manual all about some of the innovative soft tissue strategies that we use with our athletes beyond just like the classic foam rolling that I teach you here in the program. Instead, he's got some cool stuff for working on adductors and pec minor and all that. So those three are pretty cool. And then I also did two extra bonuses. One, which I mentioned, is that two times a week training program that people can use for in-season athletes and endurance athletes. But also, but this one's kind of cool. There's a show and go quick exercise reference guide. Basically what it is, it's a PDF with direct links to every exercise in the program, including, you know, basically all of your exercise modifications as well as everything in the standard program. And what you can really do is you can throw that up on your iPhone or your BlackBerry or whatever it may be and quickly access whatever video you want while you're at the gym. So if you forget how to do a dumbbell reverse lunge from a deficit, you can just pop right onto your phone and check that out, and it'll basically get you rocking and rolling right there without having to run to a computer. So that's kind of the core product in itself, and that outlines a little bit about it. But, you know, I'm certainly open to questions if you have some.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been very lucky to get a chance to look at the product, and just having that whole, you know, section on exercise substitutions. I think that's one of the biggest things that, you know, the biggest questions that we get into the podcast is, you know, I can't do this due to, you know, whether it be previous injury or not having the equipment and stuff like that, and being able to kind of have a list that people can go through and find a substitution right away, I think is huge, and also obviously the video database and all that stuff is going to be a fantastic. But I mean, I guess my question is, you know, for the people that are listening, this is coming out on Sunday night. So when is this?
Tuesday, Tuesday.
Oh, I mean the podcast is coming out Sunday.
Oh, okay,
night.
I got you. My bad.
So we're in the past right now, but
no worries.
So. Guess that you have to answer the question, but you know, when's it coming out, and where can people get a hold of it?
Yep, it'll be out on Tuesday morning. To be honest, I don't know exactly what time, but it will be Tuesday at some point, and they can get it at showandgotraining.com.
Perfect. Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on, man. And for people who haven't already, like I said, make sure you bookmark ericcressy.com and check out the awesome videos that Pete has put up on crestyperformance.com. Not only some training stuff, but also some really funny stuff up there as well on Pete's blog. It's definitely worth checking out. But Eric, again, man, thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, and I'll see you this weekend.
Thanks, Kim.